You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Commander Tom Garcia, and of course, my lovely co-host is here with us, Paula Lauzon Osman. How are you today, Paula?
Good, excellent, Tom. How are you?
Good, good. Well, we've got an all-star lineup today, but I know that some of these people are pretty busy, so we're going to hope that they call in, and the first group that we're supposed to be talking to today is Craig Sawyer, Navy SEAL. He's also done the History Channel's Deadliest Sniper Missions, Top Shot Expert. He was a Maximum Warrior in Maxim Magazine. And he's involved with the Wounded Warriors in Action organization. And the way I got connected with him was through Jill Trammell, who is hopefully going to join us as well. And she is helping them out with public relations as well as some other veterans groups. And then she has her own veterans group. I'm trying to remember if it's called, like, when she comes on, she can tell us, but like Call to Action or some such thing. I may be getting it totally wrong. But she does a lot of work with veterans, and that's how I connected with her, because I get involved with a lot of different groups that are working on these projects, whether it's homeless vets, wounded vets, on and on, and that kind of thing. Which brings up, I'm going to mention Joan Flowers today on the show. On April 19th, we did an interview with her, and we're still working. If you're out there listening, Joan, I'm still working on it, doing some research so that we can have the right ammo to go to the Veterans Administration or higher than that in the political realm to get her father finally buried in Arlington. He was a war hero in World War II, and a lot of his records are missing. There was a fire in the National Archives in Arlington, and we've gotten some of his information, but not all of it. And what we have gotten was he was released as a warrant officer in the Army. And in the short amount of time that he was in the Army in World War II, to have advanced that rank says he was somebody. He was absolutely somebody and really impressed people. He worked for General Patton. So anyway, go to the website. You'll find out more information about her at usaradionetwork.com. We're trying to help Joan out. And also, she spent a lot of money on this effort. So if you like supporting veterans' causes, send me an email. We like to send Joan some money when we can, because she's spent a lot of her own money on this effort over the years, going back to the Clinton administration when President Clinton actually promised her, and I've seen the paperwork, promised her that her father would be buried in Arlington. So, you know, that hasn't happened, so we're going to continue to work on that. Also in the lineup today is Maureen France. And she's running for Florida State District 28. Now, that's an important district. I'm going to let her tell you about this, but she's been involved with some other, you know, political-type positions, not currently, but she's been the city commissioner in DeLand, Florida, and she helped found the Volusia Tax Reform. So she knows something about local and state issues, and that's very important here in Florida. So she's going to be on a little bit later in the show. And I think we'll probably be joined by our good friend Dick Bierenbach, because he helped me set this interview up with Maureen. And then finally, we've got, let me find the other one here, Philip Young. He's out in California, and he's going to be calling in at the end, toward the end of the show. He's with the Conservative Party, USA California branch. And not going to be talking so much, I don't think, about the Conservative Party, but rather jobs in the U.S., exportation of jobs, and what the government has done to harm this economy and harm the livelihoods of its citizens. You know, the whole purpose of our government, really, and we've had this discussion many times, Paula, the purpose of our government was to protect our rights. In other words, we have a constitution that outlines what the government can do, and that's it. And that whole purpose was to secure our personal liberty. But it's gone way beyond that. It's gone to the point where we have a president who says he's really disappointed that the Constitution doesn't tell government what they must do for the people. Well, there's a reason it doesn't say that, dummy, because that's not what we wanted. And it doesn't work for the very well that way. So anyway, Philip Young is going to be on toward the end of the show. Again, hopefully. he'll remember to call in. And let's see. Tomorrow is a special Thursday broadcast, and I want to tell you about this lady, J.E. Dyer. She wrote a great article a couple weeks ago that really got my attention. And it was, we mentioned it on Monday's show, about discretionary spending. It's discretionary spending, not entitlements, that are really killing us right now. And we can talk a little bit more in the show because I got some good articles that talk about, Paula. For example, when the president said the other day that he doesn't know, he can't guarantee that we'll be sending out Social Security checks on August 3rd, that was an outright lie. That was an outright lie. Social Security checks on that day are going to amount to 50, I've seen two numbers, 20 or 50 billion.
Okay.
Treasury took in June, almost 200 billion. It'll take in a little over 200 billion in July. So to meet our military, Social Security, Medicare, and national security obligations, as well as pay interest on the debt and pay off debt that has come due, we have enough money to do that without borrowing any money. No, not borrowing any money. So it's not right. And there's an article that was in CNS News by Terrence Jeffrey that outlined the data. He went to the Department of Treasury and got the numbers that show we don't need to borrow any more money. Now, we're not going to get very far, but it's an outright lie to say that we may not be able to give seniors. It's all scare tactics. It's fear-mongering. That's what this guy is. He's a pure politician. Instead of being a leader and leading us, he's more interested in his next election. So anyway, we can get to that article if we want to at some point. And but I'm going to pass the torch to you for a few minutes here, Paula, to talk about what you've seen in the news and what's caught your eye.
Hi. I saw in must reads today in the Washington Post, Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke warned today that failure to raise the nation's debt ceiling could trigger a huge financial calamity. But conservative House Republicans accused President Obama of scare tactics on the issue. The day after moving to head off a U.S. default by offering Obama new authority to raise the federal debt limit, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, a Republican from Kentucky, said congressional Republicans are united in opposition to voting for such an increase. I bet there won't be a single Republican vote to raise the debt ceiling at the end of the day, he told conservative commentator Laura Ingraham in a radio interview this morning. He also accused Obama of trying to entice us to raise taxes. McConnell's proposal of a backup plan for raising the debt ceiling if negotiations on broad debt reduction fail would essentially shift the political burden of the move to Obama and his fellow Democrats, allowing the borrowing limit to be raised without any Republican votes. Commenting separately on the plan today, House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, a Democrat. Democrat from California, and Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, a Democrat from Nevada, described it as a step in the right direction. In testimony before the House Financial Services Committee, Bernanke added his voice Wednesday to the chorus of public officials who have argued that raising the debt ceiling is vital for the health of the U.S. economy. He predicted dire consequences if either the U.S. government were to default on its debts or immediate massive spending cuts were enacted. Bernanke deflected efforts to secure his endorsements for specific debt reduction proposals under discussion, but he was unambiguous in his warnings about what could happen if no deal is reached. He compared what might happen in that scenario to the aftermath of the failure of the Lehman Brothers Investment Bank in 2008 when economic activity fell at a 6% annual rate for two straight quarters. Such warnings appeared to be having little impact on a trio of conservative GOP lawmakers who urged House Speaker John Boehner, a Republican from Ohio, on Wednesday to disregard Obama's statements on the consequences of a default. In a news conference this morning, Representatives Michelle Bachmann and Louis Gemmert and Steve King referred to Obama's warning that senior citizens might not receive their Social Security checks if the debt limit is not raised by an August 2nd deadline. Oh, such warnings appeared to be having little impact on a trio of conservative GOP lawmakers who urged House Speaker Boehner on Wednesday to disregard his statements. With debt reduction talks between the White House and GOP leaders stalled, McConnell said yesterday that his proposal offers a last-choice option for meeting the deadline. Senior Democrats privately embraced the idea, saying it could offer a detour around the looming crisis, and they were more laudatory in public comments a day later. In a Senate floor speech today, Reid said he was glad to hear that the Republican leader has come forward with a backstop proposal to address the debt limit. The proposal would transform the political dynamics of the debate, placing the entire burden for raising the $14.3 trillion debt limit on Obama and congressional Democrats. Republican lawmakers would be spared from voting to raise the limit and could shift their campaign for unprecedented spending cuts to the congressional appropriations process, where the risk of stalemate is shutting down the government instead of capsizing the U.S. economy. However, they would lose the approaching deadline as leverage to pursue their cost-cutting agenda. So that's pretty much what you were talking about a little while ago, Tom.
Yeah, okay. Well, let me just go to that article right now and talk about, let's see, pull this one up. It's from Terrence Jeffrey, and if you go to CNS News, you can find it there. And Mark Levin also talked about this on his show. It came out on Tuesday, but he's been putting a series of articles out, such as, the Treasury tax revenue for June was $196, and Social Security payments were $50 billion. Veterans,
yeah,
$7
billion. Yeah.
So well covered. The previous one to that was official Treasury reports, coffers full enough to cover entitlement programs, veterans, federal salaries, interest without borrowing a dime. And that's the one that I really zeroed in on. And, again, that's Terrence Jeffrey, CNS, as in Charlie November Sierra, news.com. And they talk about, you know, when President Obama told CBS News that there may not be enough money in the U.S. Treasury. I'm thinking, well, what are you going to spend it on then? Why would you not give seniors their Social Security checks? You know, the Supreme Court ruling that the liberals like to try and use to say that, well, the president has some leeway here on the debt limit and maybe he'll do it himself, actually ruled that Social Security, you know, is considered a pension, just like the Constitution says, pensions, and will be paid. Bondholders will be paid first, but ruled that Social Security should be considered at the same level as bondholders. So here's what we're talking about. People, bonds have come due, interest and Social Security, really, literally, and then, of course, veterans, our service members, would be the first ones to get paid. But those are exactly who he zeroes in on, like there might not be enough money. Well, please tell me, Mr. Obama, where is the money going to go then? You know, public sector unions and the Department of Energy and the Department of Interior and the Department of Agriculture and our state parks and on and on and on. I mean, and here's the thing, constitutionally, it's up to him and his Secretary of the Treasury to prioritize. But we have, here's the amazing thing about it. The law is there. The law is there. It's in the Constitution as well as other law that makes it very, very clear. If you hit the debt ceiling, you will pay your debts and you will prioritize who gets the money. That's what the law says. It doesn't say when you can't ever hit the debt limit and then, you know, not raise it again. I mean, this whole thing about raising the debt limit really is an opportunity for liberals to always, every few years, go, oh, that's those bad Republicans. They want to kill Granny. They want to make sure that she can't go get her, you know, health care and won't get her Social Security checks, so she's going to be eating dog food. I mean, that's what they use it for. That's why they like having a debt limit, and that's where we need a balanced budget. And not just a balanced budget, but capped. And we've got to cap it at a point. Dion Long talked about this when he came on the show. It's got to be capped at a reasonable point. And we've got to go back quite a few years, really, honestly, early 2000s. Cap it at a reasonable point, the size of the federal government, and then it can never grow any faster than, you know, you either tie it to GDP, inflation, and not even just a direct tie, but a percentage of that. You want it to grow very slowly. But we have just grown in monolithic terms, the government, under President Obama. In fact, since he's been in office, we're talking 3 years now, just about coming up on 3 years, he has added, and we say he, well, the government, under his direction, under his leadership, has added $5 trillion to the total federal debt. And Paula, 3 years ago, the total debt was, you know, about $9 trillion. It's now up to almost $15 trillion. This guy has added more than anybody ever in history, all presidents combined. And the liberals, we know, they always use the excuse, well, but he saved us from a precipice. How? This doesn't make any sense. Whether you're a business or a family, you go, boy, we're kind of in debt and we're struggling and the economy's down. Well, let's get some more credit cards. That'll spur our personal economy, or that'll spur the local economy. It doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. I mean, it can work that way to some degree, but it's already – we've done two stimuluses. Oh, and did you see that in the news today? Now they're hinting at there may be another stimulus. So we're going to go further into debt, Paula. And I'm disgusted by it all. And we had the former Fed chairman, whoever came right after him. And I guess it was Ben Bernanke. Has there been somebody between the two? I don't even remember now.
Not that I'm aware. I think it went right from Greenspan right over to Bernanke, and to be quite honest with you, I think Bernanke's been trying to hold his own with this whole mess, because it's like, you know, when you pass one thing to another person, here's a basket of junk, knock yourself out and have at it. And I think, like I said, my opinion is Bernanke is doing the best he can to keep the public informed of what's going on, and it's as if, you know, nobody's listening to him.
Well, he's talking about there may be another stimulus, but then it was Greenspan who not too long ago said the first one didn't work. So you got former Fed chairman saying, so, you know, you can discount either one of them. Well, one knows what he's talking about, one doesn't. But you got one saying, well, the first stimulus didn't work, round of stimulus. And and when I say stimulus, what we're talking about is this qualitative easing where the Fed basically injects a bunch of money into by giving it to the Treasury, and then that means the government gets to spend it. But that first round of stimulus didn't work. And the second qualitative easing, some people think it might have helped a little bit, but all it's really doing, in my personal opinion, as well as many other people that you can find online, and now we're talking to some economists, et cetera, and we talked about the French economist just on Monday's show, all we're really doing is propping up something that is unsustainable.
Yeah,
and we're propping it up and holding up, and it's sort of like you and me, Paula, you know, holding up something that's kind of heavy. After a while, we can't hold it anymore. What would be natural would be just to set it down on the ground and figure out a way to, you know, regroup and take this weight. Let's just say it's even a piece of furniture that's broken, fix it, and then set it back up so it can stand on its own. But what we're doing is we're calling a couple friends over. Hey, help us hold this up so it doesn't fall. And then they stand there, and pretty soon everybody's getting tired. And then we say, well, bring some more people over. You'll never have enough people. So that's really what we're doing. We're propping up a unsustainable economy and certainly an unsustainable growth of government that we talked about on Monday. It's up to, let's see, by 2009, into 2009, it's up to 8.3% of GDP. Now, GDP can fluctuate, but as a percentage, historically, we look at, hey, how much should the government be spending? How big should the government be based on the economy? A lot of people believe that, well, if the economy is really big and booming, we can afford to have a bigger government. The problem is the economy can contract. Does government ever contract? And there's the problem. Government doesn't contract. It should and it needs to, but it doesn't. It stays at that level. But because the economy's down, GDP is down, it's unsustainable. And that's where we're at. We're at an unsustainable vector of federal growth, and we want to just keep trying to prop it up. It's not going to work. You got to set it down, let it go. And I am absolutely against raising the debt ceiling. We've just proven via the Treasury numbers that we don't need to raise the debt ceiling to pay our debts in the coming months. Now, a solution has to be found, but that needs to be cuts. Because as we've been talking about, Paula, the economy's down. And until the economy rebounds, you can't be growing government, but that's what we've done. We've grown government, and this administration wants to keep growing it. And so they just want more and more money. It's almost sort of a greedy thing, you know? Gimme, gimme, gimme. But and then when we talked about the French economist, and she may be American, but she's got an accent and a French name, and is a professor at George Mason University, she talked about easily $2.5 trillion, a very conservative estimate that she and a colleague put together of assets that the U.S. government can sell and raise $2.5 trillion. I think it's actually $2.4 trillion. That's I see people doing that all over the place. Do you see that, Paul? People are like, well, you know what? Times are tough right now. We're not going to go buy another big screen TV, or maybe we're going to sell the one we have and pull that old TV out of the closet. I see people doing it all the time, so they're selling off assets in order to get by until the economy picks up. But what's our government doing? Oh, no. They want us to do that, and they want us to feel a little more pain and share a little more in the pain. But the government isn't willing to. So, and then you look at Obama's staff all getting raises, and they dance around that like, oh, no, well, they all shifted jobs. And every time they shifted to a different job or got a new title, well, that's a higher-paying job. Yeah. Creative accounting. You know what?
And I see no justification in that, and I don't understand how it is that can be flaunted in the face of the citizens of the country.
Well,
it's clear that everybody hasn't taken to the White House lawn with torches and stuff and going, hello.
Yeah. Well, I really think people need to be out in the streets, at least protesting. Get hold up a sign. No violence, and let your feelings be known. Let the media see. The problem is, what the media does, and I saw this, a couple years ago. They come on out looking for the one really angry person who maybe shouldn't be interviewed. It just, I went to many different sort of rallies. Sometimes they were considered Tea Party rallies. Sometimes they were just, people that got the word, we're going to go protest this. Maybe somebody's going to be in town, like the president, like when he came to visit NASA. The first time he came to visit Kennedy Space Center, he came out to Brevard Community College and spoke to everybody there, anybody that wanted to come. It was anybody could come out. And I think they set up a stage I wasn't there for that. They set up a stage, I believe, outside so he could address everybody. And the second time he came back, they flew in to the Kennedy Space Center, the runway there, and he just stayed there. And they sent all the employees home. And so the folks that went out to protest, and I did go out there for that. I wasn't protesting. I was campaigning. But to shake hands and talk to people, were lined up along the highway there, but they could only go so far. They couldn't get down to the Space Center. It's not like you could go stand outside the fence, because the government's land goes quite a bit up toward the US-1. So you're miles from the actual Space Center. So nobody's ever going to see you, except maybe the employees that were coming out getting sent home early. And some of the employees, because there's a great restaurant there in Titusville called Dog's Rust. There's a couple of them in the air, but chain. But the one right in Titusville, a lot of the NASA employees and contractors go there. And, they were telling me that it was the Constellation program that was cut by Obama. And so they still had, pictures up of the Constellation program and rockets and that kind of stuff. They were told just before Obama got there, take it all down. Take it all down. We don't want to see it. Who cares? What's the big deal? The guy, the more stories I hear about him where there's somebody there that I know that told me, it might not be different for other presidents, but just sounds like not a nice guy, quite honestly. Anyway, that's just sort of hearsay. But that's what went on with NASA and with the protests. And it was very peaceful. But I watched the media come out there and look around for somebody. First, they look for a sign that might be something bad. Like, for example, somebody had a sign that said, Obama is a modern day, and, pick a dictator's name. Oh, man, they'd zero in on that person. So they could prove, because the media in Central Florida typically is liberal, so they could prove that the Tea Partiers are racists and Naziites and, on and on and on, which isn't true, because I knew a lot of those people, and they're really good people. And when we would have meetings and get-togethers, we wouldn't stand in a room like I've seen some liberal organizations do and scream and rant and rave. We'd have very civil discussions and thought-provoking discussions and, strategizing on, what can we do to make a difference, what we can do to help get different candidates elected. I mean, it was very peaceable. And so the media's portrayal of protesters that are that would be protesting this administration are going to be demonized by the media. That's what they're going to be. Until the media somehow feels the pain, then maybe they'll, you know, get on board with trying to get rid of this administration. But I saw a good joke from the list of jokes you sent me, Paula, from The Tonight Show with Jay Leno, and I guess it was probably from a couple days ago. Well, it was from yesterday. So it might have been 2 nights ago. Anyway, Jay Leno said in his monologue, President Obama's staff got a raise of 8%, more than double the average for regular Americans, which is 3%. But to be fair, many of them will be unemployed next November. Yes, they will. Unfortunately, yep. I'm sorry, but you know, you tied yourselves to the tailcoats of a guy that is trying to destroy our country. And so you're gone. Sorry. Start looking for another job.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so that to me has been the big news, you know, going on in the, you know, what's, I mean, you tie all that to the economy. We're talking the debt limit. How does this affect us as Americans? Our government, our leaders are there to represent us. Our representatives are there to represent us, not manage us. They're there to represent us and our best interest. And our best interest is not to just keep piling on debt. I mean, you know, Obama's proposal back in February-March timeframe, was going to double the public debt by within 10 years. So the public debt, which is $9 trillion right now of the $14.5 trillion, was going to be at about $18 trillion. $18 trillion. So, Paul, I mean, how can – it's inconceivable to me that – in a weak economy today, we can't pay down any debt. We can only slow down the rate at which we're going into debt. But magically, 10 years from now, our economy would just be doing so good, booming like gangbusters, that we can then pay off $18 trillion. It's not going to work. And do they have a crystal ball so they know 10 years from now that we'll be out of this recession? Remember, the Depression lasted, you know, at least 10 years. And, and it took a while to get some steam rolling after World War II when we got rid of FDR. But, you know, how long is it going to be? So we're just going to keep piling the debt. No, it doesn't work that way, and I'm absolutely opposed to raising the debt ceiling. We need to start living within our means. And the other thing about, you know, well, we got to raise taxes too because we got to pay this off. Well, you cannot even make a dent in this kind of debt by just taxing the rich. You can't even make a dent in taxing everybody. I saw the numbers, this is a few weeks ago, so I'm kind of stabbing a little bit in the dark here, but it'll be close. Anybody making like $100,000 on up, if you take all of their annual income, all of it, not raise their tax rate, just take all of their income. They work all year long, and you take all of their money. It would add up to maybe $700 billion. So you're talking all the rich people, all the people that you know, come on down to about $100,000 in annual income. So we can't make a dent simply by raising taxes. So what are the liberals' answer to that? Why is it they're so dead set on raising taxes on millionaires and billionaires who, quite honestly, probably don't even make any money? I mean, if you're a gajillionaire and you live in a big mansion and you've got all kinds of write-offs and loopholes and that kind of stuff, like General Electric, for example, that didn't even pay any taxes, you don't need that much money. You could probably live on $100,000 a year because you've got everything. Your car is a business write-off and on and on and on. Now, if that's not the case, there are plenty of rich people. But when you say billionaires, how many billionaires are there in the U.S.? Maybe 30? I don't know. There can't be a whole lot. Millionaires? And what is the definition of a millionaire? Is it somebody who just has a successful business and they're a millionaire? And how successful was their business last year? Might not have been successful at all. How successful will it be in 2 years? You know, I think it's absolutely immoral to look at 1 year and one income and say, you're rich, we're taking half your money. Absolutely immoral. And then other people, though, no, we're not going to take half your money. We're only going to take a small portion or not even take any. That is immoral to me. And I truly believe it to be immoral. It is immoral. I'm going to say it is immoral. Somebody try and prove to me how it's not immoral. But in any case, so their solution is to tax. But then it's not just people. See, it's corporations. I went to a website that was a somewhat liberal website because I like to, you know, do some opposition research, Paula. And I looked at an article that talked about why Republicans are so screwed up on this debt debate. And I couldn't believe all of the people that posted comments. Yeah, it was bad corporations. You know, they were making so much money and they're just pocketing it on and on and on. The oil companies, for example, they – have typically a 10% margin of profit. If we just say doubled their taxes, Paula, do you think they would cut their profit margin down to 5%? No. They're going to still have a 10% profit margin.
Right.
We're the ones that are going to pay for it. So all these dumb libtards who think that going after big corporations and taking their money is somehow going to hurt the corporation, my pension is invested in some of these corporations. Dick Birnbach, you know, retired from the did he retire in New York or was it Illinois or I think Minnesota actually. You know, he's got a lot of police and fire department pensions have a portion and sometimes somewhat significant, and if they're managed properly, it's not significant, but a pretty good chunk of their pensions invested in oil companies. So all you're doing is hurting retirees and the average person out there that may have a few investments or is working for one of those companies. And then those of us that are consumers purchasing those products, we get hurt because the cost just gets passed on to us. So that is raising corporate taxes is an insidious way of taxing the poor. Taxing the poor, because poor people that don't have much still have to heat their home, Paula. They still need electricity. They still need water. They've got to pay for that stuff. You start raising the taxes on energy. They may drive a car, or they may just take the train like I do to go down to the airport when I go to fly. But the rates went up on the train. Now, of course, there's a reason for that. It doesn't have necessarily to do with fuel. But let's say fuel spikes up because we want to punish the bad fuel oil companies. Well, then the rate to ride the train is going to go up, the rate to have to get on an airplane to go visit grandma or have your kids come visit you, and on, all go up. They're just going to pass these on. They're just going to pass it on to us, the consumers. So I couldn't believe how many liberals are gullible enough to think that going after corporations and raising their taxes is going to eat into their profits. It's not going to eat into their profits at all. They'll just pass it on to us. They'll continue their profit. Now, the other thing is, why is it, Paula, that we look at an oil company with a 10% profit margin and call them bad and they're just gouging us and they're, you know, it's all their fault, the gas prices are high and you got rich fat cat executives? But then you go and look at a company like Apple Computer, their profit margin is well above 10%. It's 25%. And then you look at Google. Everybody loves using Google, and they're all over the Internet with all kinds of things going on now. Their profit margin is 30%. Well, how come we're not calling them evil and going after them? Yeah, you know, the liberals just are – they're whacked. They don't get it at all. They don't understand basic economics. But somehow we're the ones that don't understand basic economics. And I, Paula, I'm trying to enrich the big fat cat executives. I'm trying to enrich them. I don't get to control. You know what? Those are private companies. Or they may be even public, you know, companies because you can purchase stock in them. They get to do what they want. I mean, that's called liberty. If we want to control all industry and make everything fair like the liberals would like, well, then we're going to be called a socialist or a fascist or even a communist country, depending on to what degree we go down that road. We will not be a liberty-loving representative republic. So that's I have a feeling our Navy SEAL, Craig Sawyer, not going to be calling in today, but I do understand what may have occurred because they've been working the last few days with Wounded Warrior, Wounded Warrior, not Project. Let me make sure I say it right. It's the Wounded Warrior. I want to say it right. Wounded Warriors in Action organization, and in Atlanta to take these guys out and gals in some race cars, real race cars. And let them drive around and have some fun. And I believe it's being filmed, and it may be being filmed by the History Channel. So they felt like they were going to be available today at 4. I mean, they told me this over a week ago, but apparently not. So, Paula, do you think I should call up Craig Sawyer, the Navy SEAL and martial arts guy, and threaten him? I don't think so.
I can tell like you that. He does have a Facebook page. I was really impressed with what I saw.
Yeah, yeah, he's a great guy and he's a tough guy, but he's a great guy and he's you know, really gotten involved with this Wounded Warriors in Action project and group. So we'll get him on the show eventually. And now I do want to announce this, and I hope there'll be a little more. I know they've got this project going on right now, but Jill and Craig are going to be taking over the show from me while I'm on vacation for 2 weeks. you know, get the dates here, and they'll be. I'll put them on the website. But I was hoping that they'd be able to come on and talk to us today, so people would get a get to meet them a little bit and talk with them. But starting on the 25th, which is a Monday, so that's about, you know, a little less than 2 weeks away. 25th and 27th, so the last week of July, they'll be broadcasting. And I wanted Jill to talk about one of the series of shows that she's going to do. Out of four shows, she's going to do a series on the TSA whistleblowers and what's been going on with the TSA. And she's got some contacts there and some folks that she's going to bring on and talk about that whole process. But so the 25th and 27th of July, and then the 1st and 3rd of July. And they'll be broadcasting while we are out having a little rest and relaxation with the family. So in any case, yeah. And then we've got, I do want to bring up that we've got Ambassador Escudero coming on next week, on Wednesday. Next week, I don't get back from Madrid until Monday, so and it's late, so we're not going to do a broadcast on Monday. We're going to move it to Tuesday. So we're going to do Tuesday, Wednesday next week. Again, it'll be on the website. I'll post it on Facebook as well. And we will do a normal broadcast on Tuesday, talking about current events. I don't have a guest lined up, but on Wednesday, three-time ambassador Stanley Escudero is going to be with us. And he actually was in Iran when the Shah got outed, and he was there undercover. And he's been in a lot of interesting jobs that he's had over the course of his life. He's retired now and had three different ambassador positions in the, I will call them the stands. I can't remember which they are. It's like Tajikistan, you know, three different stands in the former Russian or former Soviet Republic. So he's got some great insight in the Middle East because he still, you know, keeps in touch with folks that are doing things in the Middle East. And he has got great insight. I hear a phone ringing, Paula.
Hello?
let's see who we got. Somebody. Okay, Paula's screening somebody. Somebody called in, so we'll see who that is. I don't recognize the number. Don't know if that's one of our next guests calling in, so I'll let her check them out. But in any case, so Ambassador Escudero next Wednesday, and then that is the most immediate information I got. But tomorrow, J.E. Dyer, don't miss that. Great article. She writes for the Weekly Standard, Hot Air, Green Room, has her own conservative blog, and I'll take a quick look at that to find her so we can plug her website. She's the Optimistic Conservative. And if you just, you can, I think, type it in optimisticconservative.com. I think it might be a .com, but just Google Optimistic Conservative and you'll find her blog. And she's got some great articles there. So we're going to have a great discussion tomorrow starting at 4 p.m. And we'll see how long it goes. I don't envision it'll go for a full hour tomorrow unless we get any callers. But we'll talk to her about the economy, the debt limit, and her article that it's discretionary spending, not entitlements. And that's been my big thing for years. I mean, back when I was campaigning for Congress, so a few years ago, that's what I was talking about. I was talking about before anybody was talking about. Not like I'm some clairvoyant. It's just I see it as a problem and a growing problem. And now we all recognize it's not just a growing problem. It's unsustainable and it's gone too far. So, unfortunately, we're at that breaking point. Anyway, Paula, did somebody try calling in? Wasn't hopefully
yeah, it was the wrong number, Tom.
Somebody called the wrong number. Okay. Well, we're going to have in a few minutes Maureen France calling in, and she is running for state legislature in Florida. The reason I wanted, you know, to talk with her on the show is one, I, you know, want to give her an opportunity to reach out to her voting segment, but she has a lot of experience with local taxation and government accountability, and that's one of the things we'll talk to her about, reducing the size and scope of government. And, you know, she's going to be doing that at the state level now. She's done it at the local level, and she's running for state legislature. She'll be doing it at the state level. And efficiency and accountability. I like all those words. Efficiency, accountability. What's another good one? Transparency. Of course, those are the a lot of the words that you know, Barack Obama used, but he didn't live up to it. But Maureen has lived up to that, those terms for the with the groups that she's worked with on tax reform, as well as the government groups that she's been a part of up to this point. And we'll let her tell us about her background a little bit and why she's running and what people in Florida need to be looking at and thinking about as they select local and state officials to represent them and represent their interests. So it looks like Maureen has just called in, and I see that Paula is screening that call. And then we'll get right to that. Sorry, folks, that Craig Sawyer wasn't able to come on today. I'm sure they have good reason, and that good reason has something to do with Wounded Warriors in Atlanta this week and weekend. But we will get them back on the phone. Is that Maureen, Paula?
It is. Yes, it is.
Let's just bring her right on. Maureen, how are you today? Hi, Maureen. How are you? Well, for some reason, she's not hearing us. Maybe she didn't think that she was going to be on right away. All right. Well, we'll wait till we hear Maureen say something. And I was hoping Dick Birnbach was going to call in as well. Maybe he'll call in here in a few minutes. And then after we're done with Maureen again, remember, we've got the gentleman from California to talk to us about some government ways to get government out of our lives so that we can improve the economy and improve jobs and even bring jobs back to this country that we've sort of exported overseas. So we'll take that. Maureen, can you hear me now? Oh, just went to screen Maureen again. All right, and then we've got another caller that don't know, don't recognize the number. Not from around here, but it looks like Maureen just dropped off. Okay, so we're having fun today, but we'll just keep on plugging along. Craig Sawyer, by the way, if you want to find out about him, and we will eventually get him on the show here, is got a website called tacticalinsider.com. And then, of course, he's got a Facebook page. If you just go to Craig Sawyer, and in parentheses, this was call sign Sawman. He's got a page there that talks a lot about the stuff that he's been working on and what's going on. And we'll look forward to getting him on the show. But he and Jill will be co-hosting for 2 weeks for me. And I'm sure that's going to be some very interesting shows. All right. Well, let's just pull up some headlines here. And we'll talk about that till Maureen calls back. Something must have happened with her. We're having problems with our guest today. All right. Let's take a look. What's the latest headline? Well, Obama's popularity is at an all-time low. I mean, a new poll out says that he is viewed less popular, less influential, less effective by the Arab world than George Bush was in George Bush's final year. I mean, that's for some people that might be kind of hard to believe, but let's see who did the poll. It was the oh, gosh, it doesn't even say in this article. It should. But anyways, it was a poll that just came out, and it was a supposedly nonpartisan, Arab organization. But the Arab American Institute. But not only is he less popular than Bush was in his final year, in five of the six countries that were polled, he came out less popular than Iranian's president, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. So that's like, wow, you're not popular at all. I mean, his approval rating is like at 3% with the – and it's not just his approval rating, but it's the U.S. So all this talk about President Obama improving our image abroad, especially in the Arab world, it hasn't worked. It's worse than it was under George Bush. I was on a liberal talk show a few months ago, and the host said, well, isn't that worth something that he's improved our image abroad? I said, well, first of all, I disagree. I don't think he has. I travel, I wouldn't say all over the world right now, but I fly all over South America and to Europe, and I don't see that. I mean, I see some of it, but overall, they're seeing through him. Have family up in Canada on my wife's side, and they're all seeing through it, and they were quite excited about him getting elected, and now they're not so excited, and they're not impressed at all with him. So the shine has not only worn off, but it's worse for us. So he's actually done us a disservice with his incompetence and poor leadership. So that was one of the headlines that caught my eye today. And there's some others, but it's all, Paula, focused on you know, kind of this debt ceiling and the economy and what's really going on. You know, Obama can't go around Congress to raise the debt limit. We had a discussion about that. It's real simple. The 14th Amendment doesn't allow him to do that. In fact, if he were to unilaterally raise the debt limit, he would be violating the 14th Amendment, violating it, because the 14th Amendment says not just that the debt of the United States will not be questioned. It says the debt of the United States that has been approved by law. So in other words, if he raises the debt ceiling, Paula, he's creating new debt. And but it's not approved by law, which means it then could be questioned. And the 14th Amendment says our debt can't be questioned, and it must be approved by law. And the next paragraph, right after that paragraph in the 14th Amendment, says that Congress will have the authority to enforce the provisions of the 14th Amendment. Doesn't say the president, it says the Congress. So he has absolutely no authority to do that. But, you know, people would like to do it. And the other thing is, you know, Mitch McConnell saying that he'd like to pass some legislation that would give the president the authority in three chunks to go up to $2.5 trillion, to raise the debt ceiling three times up to $2.5 trillion. And if the Congress doesn't want him to do it, then they have to, by supermajority, say no. Well, that's not going to happen. That'll never happen. So this was an attempt, and I think quite sophomoric attempt, to try and lay the blame at his feet. Let him raise it, and then when things don't work out, we go like, hey, and you know, we couldn't really even stop him, too. It's not even our fault, because we took a vote, but we just couldn't muster enough votes. So it's all his fault. I think that's the stupidest plan I've ever heard of. Now, some people have seen some articles saying, oh, it's brilliant. But most are saying it's stupid, and I just think, on the surface, it's absolutely stupid the more I've looked at it. I believe it to be unconstitutional. Congress has the authority to that's right there. It's what they're, like their second enumerated power in Article 1, Section 8. That they have the authority to issue debt, not the president. Now, do they have the authority to give him their authority? I haven't seen anything in the Constitution that says if Congress doesn't want to actually do something, they can pass the buck to the president. No. They are required to do their jobs, and their job is issuing debt, not the president. Does that make sense, Paula?
Yes, it does.
So, well, anyway.
Close protocol, you know?
Yeah. Well, when you talked to Maureen there, was she were you able to actually talk with her?
Very briefly, and I was thinking of trying to call her back.
Yeah. Okay. Do you have the number? You want to give it a try?
Yep.
Well, yeah, so I don't know if she was just having a cell phone problem, you know, bad signal, and couldn't get through. It's always best to call in on a landline if you're going to do a phone-in interview, unless you really know that where you're at, you got good cell phone coverage. But I've been places where I've always had good cell phone coverage and then used my cell phone because I wasn't at home or someplace where I had a landline. And then all of a sudden it starts dropping off, and it's like, well, it never does that here. It's just, you know, Murphy's Law. That's what's going to happen when you try doing that. But that's okay. Now, let's just take a look at what this article says, and I'll give you my analysis. But it's the Washington Times. I mean, they printed one of my op-eds, so I think they're a good organization. But in any case, it says CRS analysis: Obama can't use the 14th Amendment to circumvent debt limit. Nonpartisan congressional. It's always nonpartisan, Paula. Always nonpartisan. But a nonpartisan Congressional Research Service has issued a new report saying that if Congress refuses to raise the government's borrowing limit, the White House cannot do so unilaterally. And let's see if they say what I actually had to say. Some commenters have argued that the 14th Amendment means the government cannot suspend payments. Well, no, they have to prioritize the payments. That's what they have to do. That's precisely what it says. They have to prioritize. And that President Obama can act to keep funding government even without. Well, it doesn't say that, though. This is the thing about the Constitution people have to understand. It's got to say it for you to be able to do it. The 10th Amendment makes it perfectly clear. It's got to say it for you to do it. There's no reading between the lines. It's just got to say it. And you go like, well, modern times, Tom, and hey, look, debt is debt. Government debt and the size of government, that's never going to change. That's always the same. But here we go. Clause 4 of the amendment, which was passed after the end of the Civil War, reads, the validity of the public debt of the United States, and here's the key that I talked about Monday, authorized by law. Him raising the debt limit would not be authorized by law, so he would be violating the 14th Amendment. So what they're trying to say is, in order to ensure that the debt can't be questioned, the president, well, why the president, Paula? Why not the crossing guard over here at the corner by the high school? Why not him? Why not the vice president? Why not the House leader? How about the highest minority leader? I mean, none of them have the authority to do it. Why is it suddenly the president? Because we look at the president, and too often today, we sort of look at the president of the United States and think of him almost as a king, like he's got all these powers. Go look, please, out there, if you haven't looked, go look at the Constitution, the powers that the president has. It's virtually nothing. Virtually nothing. He is so limited in his power. So then to read between the lines and go, well, the government, and this is what this article says, the government can't default. Therefore, we're going to then make it up that, well, let's see, who could then unilaterally do it, or who could – oh, the president. Yeah, the president. It's total fabrication, total fabrication. But let's see what else they have to say. CRS experts say the language doesn't convey any new powers on the president to circumvent the Congress. You know, and I've read this. Let's see, where's my pocket constitution? I had this out here just the other day, and I was going to read Section 8, Article 2. It's pretty short. Of course, when you want it, it's not around, so I'm not going to be able to read that. But it just simply says that it's the Congress has the authority. That's an enumerated power. They have the authority, and the different branches of the government, three different branches, do not share the same powers. They all have different powers. There's a reason for that. That's why it's called a separation of powers. Here's my Constitution right there. And it's pretty easy to find. Section 8, to borrow money on the credit of the United States. That's it, to borrow money on the credit of the United States. That is Congress's enumerated power. It means nobody else can do it. It doesn't mean the president can't step in and then do it. So let's see. There appears to be no basis in legislative history or arguably in the structure. And see, here's the thing, Paul. Here's why it's written that way, the 14th Amendment, and why the one Supreme Court ruling that we talked about is structured the way it is. This is the intent. If we hit a debt limit, we hit a limit where we can't afford to borrow more money, then the government must prioritize who gets paid. That's the whole purpose for this. The purpose of the 14th Amendment is not to say, oh, you can never default on your debt. I mean, it's saying that. You can't default on your debt, but it means you have to pay it. It doesn't mean, so you can just go further and further into debt and just keep doing that forever and ever and ever. That's how you will never default. Just keep going into debt. And the president has no solution whatsoever for getting out from this. His solutions always put us deeper and deeper in. So anyway, that's pretty much they didn't get into it. I mean, I think I did it a simplified yet thorough job of explaining why you can't use the 14th Amendment and that we already have an enumerated power for the Congress, that they're the ones that get to issue debt, not somebody else. Let's see. I did see that Hugo Chavez, the fearless leader of Venezuela, may need chemotherapy. So he had, first it was a cyst, now it turns out it must have been cancerous, and he may need chemotherapy. If it was on his hip, I don't know that much about it, but if it was on the bone, that's not good. Once you get cancer in the bone, that's kind of the end of things. Not always, but it certainly can be. And, well, we know that Michael Moore told us how great the health care is in Cuba and Venezuela, that it's way better than it is in the United States of America. But guess what, Paula? He won't be getting chemotherapy in Venezuela. He won't be getting it in Cuba. So he's going to have to go to Europe because they're not going to let him come here to the United States to get chemotherapy. So wonderful, wonderful socialistic system and single-payer or free healthcare system. Yeah, it works great in those countries. Really, really good. let's see. What else can we pick on here? You got anything you want to pick on, Paula?
Yeah, I got Maureen on the line. She called back in.
All right. Well, let's go right to it. Maureen, how are you today? Oops, let's see. We got to turn her microphone on. And
great.
Maureen, how are you doing?
Great, Tom. Good. How are you?
Good to have you on the show. Well, first
Thanks
of all, right
so
up front, let people know where your website is and how they can find out more about you and the race that you're in.
Well, I'm just getting started because the race is a year and a half away, or not the race, but the actual election. But my website is up, not a lot on it yet, but electmaureentrance.com. Excuse me. And so yeah, they can learn a little bit about me there. We're just getting organized with getting a lot of the material up there, but I will be adding it.
Okay, and you're running for Florida's District 28. Now, who is the current incumbent in that seat?
The current state representative there is our own Dorothy Huckel. She's been there for 8 years, so she is term limited out, and well, she's decided to pursue running for the Florida Senate.
Uh-huh.
So it's an open seat.
Yes, very good. And is this going to be highly targeted by the Democrat Party?
I would think so, because it's actually about equally divided Republican and Democrat that are registered in that district. So I would think so, yes.
And that district covers a good portion of Daytona. Where else?
It goes south from Daytona and Bevel Road, which is right at the I-4 exit from where it ends, and that goes south to the Brevard County line.
It's
the better portion of Volusia County. It also goes over to the west and takes in part of Deltona and part of Lake Helen.
Okay. And why did you decide to get in this race? Well, no, let's go back. Give us your background and what you think makes you qualified, and then let us know why you felt compelled to jump into this race.
Okay, terrific. Well, I feel like my background is makes me uniquely qualified for the position. I've been in business about 30 years now. I started out working in the Florida legislature when I was 19 years old. Believe it or not, I was a student at FSU working on the Ronald Reagan campaign.
Wow.
And was lucky enough to go to the inauguration for Ronald Reagan. And following that, you know, involvement with college Republicans, I had a great opportunity to work in the legislature and at the time the House Minority Office, which is at that time the Republicans were the huge minority position. And so I saw things from the other side where we were not the majority party. And so it was scrapping and clawing for everything at that point. In fact, it was a reapportionment year when I first started working there in 81. And so that's where I got my first, taste of the real live, legislative process. I switched to night classes at FSU and was learning how a bill becomes a law at FSU, and then I was really learning how a bill becomes a law at my job there in the Florida House. So I went on to become a legislative aide for numerous folks up there, and later was a congressional aide for a member of Congress down in Palm Beach County. And, I've always been involved, even after I, got out of working in these legislative-type positions. I've always been involved in government affairs and whatever I've been involved with. So lots of experience in all the different facets of things that we look at in state government. Worked for a school district in South Florida. Worked as a grant writer, grants consultant, worked as a financial advisor for a long time with Morgan Stanley, and I was a downtown manager in DeLand, city commissioner there in DeLand, and I've now been in healthcare for the last 8 years, working in emergency medicine. So really have had a lot of experience in all these different areas that, make our economy work. And so I feel like I have good experience, and that coupled with my leadership and involvement in the community, service organizations, my church, I think, I'm actually very able to step up to the challenge. And you ask, why I would do this, and, why would anybody do this in this in this era, you know, of great challenges that we face. And I think that's what one of the things that does attract me to it is never shied away from a challenge or the tough stuff. You know, I think I really thrive on that challenge of, you know, finding out, looking for solutions and implementing solutions in challenging times. So, you know, that and I know you're aware that I've been involved with Volusia Tax Reform and starting that organization with Margie Patchett. And, you know, it really opened our eyes to see, you know, how government had really grown out of control these last, you know, couple of decades, really.
Yeah.
And, you know, as a financial advisor, really, this is what first got me clued into it was that I had so many high-level county employees that were clients of mine and putting their drop program money and their retirement money with me, which was a good thing for me as a financial advisor. But I thought, my gosh, these are my richest clients, and they have millions of dollars in their accounts. And, you know, people in the private sector don't hold a candle to it. So that's what got me thinking about it. And, you know, Margie and I put our heads together and rallied lots of folks to work on, you know, digging deep into these local government budgets, and the rest is history. I mean, we found out more than we wanted to know.
Well,
it's time for all good men and women to stand up for their country, though, and so that's why I'm doing it.
Yeah, I agree. Well, that's great. You know, one of the things I found out in my race was not so much that I learned anything about the federal government. What I learned was that the state and local governments are doing stuff to us that most of us average citizens don't know about. And we need people that are sharp and have spent some time working, you know, creating something like Volusia Tax Reform and have been looking into this and can enlighten us. But yes, I got involved in going to you know, city council meetings and county council meetings and talking with people like you and you know, Dorothy, who is you know, now going to run for the Senate, folks like that. I realized, wow, I had no idea that our state legislators were doing this to us. I had no idea that our county commissioners were doing this stuff to us. And it's easy for them to stay under the radar because we all have busy lives, and what we see on the news is typically the federal stuff. And boy,
right,
this stuff at the local level is really, really important. And it's got to blow some people away to hear how wealthy your clients were that were the public sector employees. That's got to just, I mean, that just always blows me away.
And
when I hear
that remains true. I mean, it remains true because you have to realize, you know, and I'll just tell you up front, I'm a fan of teachers and cops and firefighters and bus drivers and crossing guards. You know, they're doing the real work that we want to be done. I mean, I'm not saying there's not room for improvement, for example, in education and whatnot, but, you know, these are the folks doing the frontline work. They're not making a lot of money. It's those higher-up administrative folks that are pointing the finger at our teachers, at our firefighters, our police officers, because they don't want the light shone on them. We learned that real quickly when we had a guy that was a teacher from DeLand High School for 27 years, and he got a promotion to the county school district level, and he couldn't even make it to his 30 years. He had to quit because he couldn't stomach what was going on at the district level. They gave him such a fat salary and benefit package, two secretaries, a car, cell phones, two offices, one on the east, one on the west. And he reported this to our budget study committee that we had for the school district budget. And, I mean, it blew us all away. And he said, here's what's happening. You know, they're really pointing the finger, you know, down at the school district and school-based personnel and that kind of thing, when really the worst offenders are at the top.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's something we need to be aware of, that the folks at the top making the cutting decisions aren't recommending themselves be cut or their colleagues up at the top. They're actually getting fatter, and they're the ones that were padding these retirement accounts that I spoke of earlier.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it sounds like that's going on at all levels of the government, but, you know,
you
kind of, unless you are educated on this, you just don't see your local you know, government organizations being able to get away with that, but it's actually quite easy. It's probably easier than the federal government, quite honestly. And so that's what I've been telling people for the last few years. If you really want to make a difference, get involved in local politics and see what's going on at the local level on up to the state level, and you're going to be surprised. You know, get involved there. Most, and it's sort of sad, most people can't tell you who their state representative is or who their state senator is, because they just don't know and don't pay attention. And when it comes time to vote, and I've been guilty of this in the past, but they just, you know, vote party line because they don't know who they're voting for. You know, there's some folks that are members of my party that I wouldn't vote for. I'd actually vote for somebody of another party just because I know what they stand for and what their voting record has been, what their record has been. So anyway, well, that's great, Maureen. Now, what would you want people to know about you in terms of what sort of plans you have? And realize that any time you go to, whether it be a state legislature or the federal legislature, you know, when you're there in the very first term, although I think term limits have helped with the sort of the whole junior issue, but there still is a juniority and a little bit of time to kind of learn your way around. But what would you like to tell people that is going to be are going to be your goals to try and accomplish, whether it be for Volusia County or the state as a whole?
Well, certainly the number one priority is reducing the size of government. And, you know, we had a lot of pullback on that, even from Republicans, because I've noticed that a lot of people, everyone's a conservative until you try to hit their program. And, you know, unfortunately, all of these entitlement programs and just government as a whole has grown so large that it's just completely unsustainable, and there's going to have to be more cuts. You're not going to be popular when you're getting rid of things. I mean, the only time you're greatly popular with people most of the time in the past has been when you're adding things and padding things and giving things away, and we've done it to such a atrocious level now it's going to be awful painful, and it's going to take very, you know, elected officials with incredible fortitude, which is, I think, the, you know, my number one strength. You know, we must have officials with fortitude. We must have officials that are willing to help educate the public that it is their civic duty, it is their absolute responsibility to not only be involved but to monitor their officials and hold them accountable. You know, it's not just for the people, it's of and by as well. And by has been left aside. And you know, we have to do, all of us have to do our part. You can't look to elected officials to solve the problems. It's we, the people, that have to get involved and have to do our civic duty. I say the same thing over and over. You know, I've been to my parents were wonderful, patriotic folks that when I was young took me to Arlington National Cemetery, and I've been there many times since. And if you've never been, it's indelible. You go there, it's indelible in your heart and your mind that there are people that absolutely paid huge prices, and there's acres of evidence to prove it. You know, and we have say we're too busy. I mean, Tom, I can't accept that as an excuse from any American. I'm very busy. I'm a single mother. I have two teenagers, you know. I have a very responsible job, and I'm a realtor on the side. I'm involved in my community, and I figure out a way to do it. It's a matter of priorities.
Yeah.
And if you can't go to one budget hearing a year, one out of 365 days a year, it's probably 2 hours out of, you know, that whole year.
Yeah.
I mean, what are we saying to these people who've given their very lives? I mean, what are we saying to our founders who, you know, we're relying upon us to carry on? I mean, we're not carrying on, and it's not just elected officials' fault. It's all of our fault. So I'm going to work hard to rally, you know, people to become involved and at a level where it's not sound bites, but it's actual, you know, knowledgeable, educated involvement and uniting people, too. That's another thing that's going to help us solve our problems. Not bills and laws are not all going to solve our problems. We've got to get the people to be, you know, educated and take an interest in, you know, what government is doing, you know, for and to them.
So I'm
going to be a real force for that, and I am, you know, out on a speaking circuit with those very topics right now. So unification, even in the Republican Party, we've got too much factionalism with you know, with the Tea Party, 9/12, and the original Republicans, we got to rally together. We're not going to win. I mean, we're going to have a big, you know, test here next year, and you know, it's imperative that we rally together. Don't you think?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I'm absolutely against you know, any multiple parties. Unless they're liberal. The liberals can divide themselves up into as many parties as they want, and I highly recommend that they do that. But for us conservatives, we have got to stick together, and that's going to be a key to we can argue about things later on after we're in power. We can, nitpick over things, but not now. We have just got to be unified to get back control of our country. And, you know, the one advantage I think we have, if people are paying attention, and I believe they are, look what's going on in Greece. Italy just got downgraded to junk bond worth their currency, and so it just keeps going on over there. And we can see the problems with whether it be a socialistic type of a country that has gone too far down the entitlement path, and they always do, or countries that end up being tyrannical, like in the Middle East, and people eventually fight and have to fight a bloody fight to take back their country. And so this is the question liberals can never answer. How much is enough? How far do we have to go before it's too far? And what will put the limits on our country? And this can apply both at the federal level and the state level. But what is too far? Look what California's done. They've gone too far. They've gone too far. So what is it that puts the brakes on government from going too far? Well, it's the Constitution. That was the intent of it. But liberals hate the Constitution. So what are they going to rely on? And they can never answer it. And the answer always is, well, we'll vote them out of office. If the people that have gone too far are the ones that control elections, then they just stop the elections. You can't vote them out of office then. So it's unbelievable. That liberals never have an answer for how, but conservatives do. We've already got a document. And it's a road path for success. It's a map for success, and it's called the Constitution. And we just need to stick to it. So, well, Maureen, anything? Last things? Tell us again where people can find you and connect with you on whether it be Facebook, Twitter, your website, and are you going to be anywhere in the next few days where people can meet you? Any groups? Let us know, and we'll get the word out here to everybody.
I appreciate that. And again, it's electmaureenfrance.com. I am on Facebook, so come and like my page. I would appreciate that. Stay in touch with me, and I appreciate the opportunity to put forward my qualifications, and I look forward to being a good conservative voice in Tallahassee. Now, I have to warn people, you know, my message has to be fairly moderate, really, to get elected in my district. You know, I have to win people's trust and confidence to get the opportunity to serve and help people. So, you know, help me with that and help me get the word out and follow what I'm doing. I don't have any public appearances in the next couple of days. I was with our speaker designate yesterday all day, Will Weatherford, who's a fantastic patriot, I think, and he's was here for the redistricting hearings. But I will look for you, Tom, to be another force for good, positive rallying of our people to come together, unify. We're all Americans first. We have to remember that. You know, we're Americans first, and we need to all rally together to do what it's going to take to solve our really big challenges we're facing.
Absolutely. Well, I don't know if you heard, but let's see, next Wednesday we'll have Ambassador Escudero on, and he's a great guy, and he's really working hard now that he's, I guess, mostly retired, and he wanted to get involved in my campaign, wasn't able to till the very end, but you got some good people there in Volusia County to help support you with your campaign and make sure that we don't let the Democrats take that seat. So anyway, Maureen, thanks for coming on the show today. You can always download this show, and you can even edit it. You're authorized to edit out, you know, your part of the interview and use that on your website as it grows or put that out there for folks. But it's downloadable, and people can also stream it later on. Literally within about 2 minutes after the show being over, people can stream the show. But in any case, thanks for coming on. We'll have you back again as the campaign season heats up, and the best of luck.
Same to you, Tom. Thanks again so very much for this opportunity.
No problem. All right, take care, Maureen.
Have a great one.
Well, Paula, I was just rooting around through my stuff here, and I was looking for one thing, but I found something else, and I didn't even know I had this. It's a bookmark, and I don't know if somebody gave it to me or I bought it, but it's a quote from Gerald Ford, and it says, "If government is big enough to give you everything you want, it's big enough to take away everything you have." And isn't that so true? That's what they'd like to do. Now, I did a little texting to Jill, and it turns out that Craig Sawyer's plane was late. You know, those lousy – now, I got to say this up front because I know it kills the comedy value of it, if there is any. But being an airline guy, I wouldn't want anybody to take this the wrong way. This is sarcasm. But, you know, I'm trying to kind of pick on the libs a little bit, you know, for the way they say things and go overboard. But, boy, those – big bad airlines are just raking in billions and billions, and they're never on time, and they don't care about the little people, and we should tax them more. Yeah. So, anyway, I bet he wasn't on American Airlines. In fact, I bet he was on Delta Airlines if he's going into Delta. But I should not judge. So, they were late. She said she's there with the founder of the Wounded Warriors in Action organization, and his name is John McDaniel. And they're both from Florida. Jill's from over on the west side of Florida, and I think so is John McDaniel. But in any case, it looks like, well, I don't know who just called in. We'll let Paula go talk to them and see who they are. I do think maybe we've got Phil Young calling in, and if that's him, we will we'll get to him in a few minutes. We won't spend that much time. We'll just let Jill tell us real quickly about what she's got coming up when she does co-host with Craig Sawyer. Last week of this month, first week of August, and then we'll go from there. But let's see.
Hey, Tom.
I see Phil Young called in, but also did we get either John McDaniel or Jill Trammell?
I haven't gotten there yet.
Okay. All right. Well, Phil, he's probably listening. We had some delays with some of our first guests, and we're just going to give them a few minutes to introduce themselves and get right on to Phil and talk to him. We're excited to have him on today, but I don't recognize the other number, and I just want to make sure. Jill told me she would call in at 5:15, so, and she's with, but I know they're busy. They've been trying to sort all this stuff out and get everybody together for this upcoming weekend with the Wounded Warriors, and so hopefully we can get them going here. But
okay.
Hey, Paula, what – oh, that is John McDaniel. Okay, let's bring John on here real quick, and then we'll get to Phil Young. Thanks for joining us, John. How are you today?
Well, I'm just great. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, and sorry that we were just saying, I'm an airline pilot for American Airlines, and I was just saying, those big bad airlines, you know, they're raking in the profits, and they don't care about people, and they're never on time. We should raise their taxes. But that wouldn't...
Well, I was in private aviation for some time, so I kind of know the cloth you were cut from, my friend.
Yeah, so anyway, I just joking around, and I don't know. Do you know what airline he was coming in on, Craig?
He's here.
Oh, okay. Good.
I gave him a ride from the airport. I mean, I could put the phone in his hand probably in 10 minutes or two minutes or less if I could find him on a 60-foot houseboat.
Well, why don't we do this? If you can find him. Well, first of all, tell us about Wounded Warriors in Action and what you guys are doing this weekend in Atlanta.
Right.
And then we'll talk to Craig real quick because he and Jill are going to be taking over my show and hosting it for a couple weeks while I go on vacation. And I just want to give the folks out there a little taste of what's going to be coming.
Sure. Well, you know, the Wounded Warriors in Action Foundation is a national independent 501c3. We were founded in 2007. And we serve our nation's combat wounded Purple Heart recipients by providing them world-class outdoor sporting activities. And today we find ourselves in Cumming, Georgia, surrounded by tremendous supporters and friends. And tomorrow we're going to be doing some Le Mans racing, get the guys out there on some Formula One race cars, our combat wounded Purple Heart heroes. And then we're going to follow that up with some precision shooting with some of the best. Of course, that's where Craig comes in, some of the best shooters in the world. You know, these guys love being in a military type environment, and dealing with weapons systems and that kind of thing. So, that's really why we're here. And Jill put this together as a PR event, and I begrudgingly said yes because it's really kind of a non-standard op for us. But you know, it's tremendous. It's beautiful here, and we're really happy, and it's going to be a great event.
Well, I can't think of anything better that I'd rather be doing than, one, sitting on a houseboat now, and later on going out and driving some Formula One fast cars and then shooting some really fast bullets. Wow, that sounds awesome. And our wounded warriors deserve all that. So we want to thank you for your efforts with that. And we're going to be working with Jill using the radio show, and I'm trying to talk her into doing a more regular radio show so we can do cover more issues that have to do with veterans issues. I've got the National Veterans Homeless Support Group that's eventually going to start doing a radio show with us. And so it's great getting the word out there and letting people know how they can help, because a lot of people want to, they just don't know. And that's where organizations like yours come in to spread the word as well as take care of our wounded warriors. So we appreciate that. And I know that Jill, when she's doing the show for the couple weeks, it's just Monday and Wednesday, we decided, like our politicians, we're only going to work 2 days a week this summer. While she's doing it, I know she'll be talking plenty about Wounded Warriors, and she'll probably want to have you come on, you know, and so you can go into more depth about what's going on and how people can. But your website, I believe, people can just simply type in WWIA.org.
WWIAF.org. WoundedWarriorsInAction.org works, or Wounded Warriors in Action Foundation, or just type in WWIAF and any search engine, it'll take you right to us. Wounded Warriors in Action.
Excellent. All right. Well, we'll be talking more about your group in some upcoming shows. We'll get you back, or Jill will get you on in a couple weeks here. But thanks for coming on. And if you happen to see Craig there, well, I want to just talk to him real briefly, and then we'll let you guys go and get to what you need.
Okay, I'll find Craig. Yeah, I think he's right around the corner here. I'm going to grab him right now. Thanks for this wonderful opportunity. I appreciate it, and best of luck with everything. And I look forward to maybe meeting you someday and spending some more time on your airways.
Yeah, absolutely. We appreciate that, John, and we appreciate everything you're doing.
Stand by for Craig.
Okay.
Hello?
Craig, Tom Garcia, how are you today?
Hey, good. How's it going?
Good. Hey, just wanted to say hello, and I hope that Jill told you that you're going to be co-hosting with her in a couple weeks on the American Hour for a couple days a week and talking about whatever she wants to talk about. That's going to be up to her, but certainly Wounded Warriors and projects you've been involved in and a few other things. So, but we're glad to have you doing that, and sorry we couldn't have you on today, but we'll get you back. And I just saw on your Facebook page something about Mike Thornton. Somebody saying they just met. I met Mike several years ago in Washington, D.C., and what a great guy. And I was actually sitting in a bar, and he was across the bar, and I recognized the SEAL pin on his lapel, and I just couldn't help myself. I just got up and walked over, and I said, that's a SEAL pin, and I'm assuming, because he's a big guy, I'm assuming you were a SEAL. And then we immediately started talking about the Navy and all kinds of other stuff. So we had a nice chat there for about an hour and a half. And in any case, tell people where they can find out more about you and any other projects you're involved in and what's going on.
Well, first of all, Jill and I are excited to be back on, and looking forward to that. So there's a lot of good things going on. And the first place I would steer people to track what's going on with me is my website, tacticalinsider.com. And the other is my Facebook page. I usually post up more often and more current events on there.
Yeah.
And it's just Craig R. Sawyer, and it's got the Sawman edition on there to help narrow the search.
Yeah, and we talked about that. We pulled your pages up earlier and talked about that earlier, but I just want to see if there's anything else. And you're involved with the Wounded Warriors in Action Foundation now this weekend and helping those guys out, and we appreciate your efforts, and we're going to continue to promote that on our radio website. I haven't gotten any links up yet, but we will, because we are big supporters of the veterans groups. I'm a member of a bunch of different veterans groups and do what I can to help them out when I can, but in any case, always looking for more groups to promote and get the word out about, and I think it'll be a great opportunity for the two of you to come on the show and talk about whatever you want, and I'm sure it's going to have a lot of military overtone, but Jill is also a conservative like myself, and so typically on the show, we talk about conservative politics and try and delve into things that you're not going to find in the mainstream media or even the conservative media. But aside from that, we do do shows frequently that are dedicated to veterans issues and have nothing to do with politics, unless I slip and I just can't help myself. But in any case, we look forward to having you guys on, and we'll be promoting that for the next couple weeks. And have fun with it.
Well, sounds very good. Looking forward to it as well, and thanks for having me on.
All right. Thanks for calling me, Craig. We'll talk to you later. Bye.
All right. We'll catch you soon. Bye.
Phil, sorry about that. We, you know, we had
no
a delay with them getting on their flight, and so we were kind of dead at the beginning of the show with nobody calling in, and then it all bunched up towards the end. But thank you for being patient. Tell everybody,
sure.
First of all, why you're on the show and where they can connect with you in terms of Facebook page or web page and find out more about what you're going to be talking about.
Well, my major concern is that we seem to have a pending crisis, obviously, with the deficit. There's too much politicizing that's occurring, a lack of, I think, comprehension that the decisions that are being made are affecting millions of Americans, and there's virtually no discussion whatsoever on rebuilding the economy. And rebuilding the economy seems essential to reducing the deficit, restoring our national pride, bringing Americans back to work, and it would seem to resolve a lot of the economic issues in the long term as far as our global position.
Yeah.
I have a website, American Reformation Party, but I am working currently on a Facebook page. I can leave that information later. It's not really up and running at this point in time, but I can leave that information you know, sometime later today.
Sure, no problem. Just email it to me.
And what I'd like, what I'd like people to do is to actually, I'm not sure that the president and Congress are actually aware of people's position with regards to job creation. It seems no one seems to be discussing that.
Yeah.
Disheartened by the fact that a lot of these deficit-reducing initiatives got stalled or basically died out in Congress over the last year and a half. So I'd like people to either write to me, and I could forward their letters, but anyone who's been affected by this Great Recession, how it's personally affected them and how they personally suffered. And I'd like to collect these and forward them, bundle them and forward them to the White House and to the members of Congress.
Okay. Now, what email can they or where can they send the letters?
They can send that to PC Young at volcano.net for the time being.
PC Young at volcano.net. Very
right.
Good. Okay. And no, I think it's a great idea. And that's why we wanted to have you on the show. And we'll have you come back another time as well so that we can, you know, maybe go a little more in depth. But you're right. You know, we've got a president
who
said, you know, at one time, I'm going to focus like a laser beam on jobs. I get it now. Do you think he's gotten it?
Absolutely.
Has he been focused like a laser
beam?
No
one's gotten it.
Yeah. Well, and you're right. And it's not just him, but, you know, he's supposed to be the guy kind of leading the charge on this. And he seems disinterested.
Well, I think everyone's politically motivated, and we don't have at risk here the politics of the situation, political expediency. This is a crisis in the making, and the repercussions are going to be global. I think there's other nations that are looking towards us that are not only investor nations but other nations for what we do. We're a global economic power that is in a leadership position, and we must maintain that. Our economic, or at least the perception of economic stability, is key to prevent the worldwide recession, which may be in the making as well. So, you know, how we focus on regenerating, bringing America back to work, is essential to sending a message out to the world that we are still here, we're stable. Our economy is going to grow, and I think the best way to deal with this deficit issue is to have economic growth. We've been subsidizing the economy too long, and we have limited options at this time, but it is essential that we begin, I think, maybe the formation of a coalition or a commission. The 1983 Social Security reform was an excellent example of that, where It insulated individuals from the political fallout, from actually managing something that needed to, you know, be stabilized. Here again, we here have fear mongering by mentioning Social Security. You know, that's brought up, and it's not a rational approach to government.
No, no, and I talked about that earlier on the show. It's almost built into the system that we're going to constantly be hitting a debt limit, and we're always going to be threatening, you know, Granny to take her check away or her Medicare.
Right.
And it's just a political tool is really what it ends up being. And we got to get away from that stuff. So now, do you have any ideas specifically that would help turn the economy around, focus more on the economy so that we can get out of this mess that we're in?
Absolutely, I do. As a matter of fact, there's several very interesting papers out there, which I can also put up on my website and certainly email to people. But I think what we need to do is actually focus on our tax structure. Corporate taxes are up to 38-39%. Now, it may seem absurd to reduce taxes on businesses, but you know, some input or some taxation is better than absolutely none. There's a lot of tax loopholes.
Yeah.
Our trade deficit has doubled, basically. It's at $43 billion at the time, up from $27 billion. We need to reduce the tax burden on small businesses. We need to reduce the tax burden on large businesses. We have created an environment here with that is punitive to small businesses. It is punitive to corporations, and we need jobs more than anything else. I think people that are out of a job would be willing to work for a lower wage because they have a job, and
yeah.
I think that restoring the economy is essential again. And you asked me what specific ideas I had, and I think closing some of the tax loopholes, managing a small input from taxes from corporations is better than none at all. A lot of businesses are not paying any taxes whatsoever.
Right.
We've got one of the largest, except for Japan, 38%, you know, corporate tax rate. Look at some of the trade agreements that we've ensnarled ourselves into, and these trade agreements essentially restrict our growth in terms of some merchandise, some items. So reviewing the trade agreements, reviewing the tax system, closing tax loopholes, and basically trying to make a pro-government or pro-business, I'm sorry, environment here, I think is the steps that we need to take. Again, reestablishing and the best message we could make is to regrow or show some economic growth. That will show the world that we're still an economic power, that we know what we're doing. And it will give hope for a lot of for millions of Americans, especially the many, many homeless Americans, which
yeah.
are struggling, that don't have homes.
Yep. Okay. Well, it all sounds good. I agree with you on that stuff. How do you see illegal immigration tying into this, or does it?
These are social issues. I see them as social issues, and they're almost a distraction technique that get people away from the real issues.
Yeah. Well, now tens of billions a year. Michael Cutler, an INS officer who comes on the show frequently, and he's actually doing his own show now on Fridays, talks about the money that's being siphoned out from the country. And so, you know, when we talk about job creation, if we didn't have any illegal immigrants, there would be more jobs for Americans. And I know Americans would do those jobs because they'd have to be paid well for them. It's almost a modern form of slavery to have illegal immigrants working, you know, under the radar and receiving the kind of low, low wages that they're getting. You know, they're living in.
Well,
but
I agree
anyway.
With that, but I think we have to prioritize our problems here. And I think illegal immigration is one of those problems that we need to, number one, bring down back to the state level. I think there's a lot of things that the federal government has programs or subsidizing programs or setting forth, education is one of them, is set up. Allocated money for, and essentially taking money from the states and giving back to the states at only 70-75% of what the state originally gave them in revenue. back for educational programs. Now, immigration is another one of these where the states are giving the federal government to protect their borders money. Now, if we look at it in a way that we need to let states handle each in their own way their immigration issue, certainly we can't make a broad statement about, well, illegal immigration is one of these catch-all phrases or demons, I guess, or witch hunt that people can look for and say, well, gee, we're losing all this money. We have illegal aliens taking advantage of our welfare system or our hospitals, all these healthcare costs. That's not the real problem. The real problem right now is getting Americans back to work. Let's not focus on demonizing other people that want to have something, a slice of the American pie. Let's let the states handle their own immigration policy, because there's going to be specific economic hits that illegal immigrants are going to have. Arizona is a great example of that, letting Arizona handle their own immigration policy. The federal government should stay hands off on that.
Well, I agree.
It's a problem, but we have to prioritize it. And I think getting Americans back to work first, you know, not looking at it from menial jobs. I mean, let's get back to white collar jobs. Let's get back to manufacturing. Let's not talk about grape picking or whatever else. Let's talk about actually creating small businesses. You know, Americans are not lazy. They want to get back to work. Let's make.
Hey, I picked pineapples when I was 16 in Hawaii, and I got minimum wage. But the locals there that were unionized worked a lot less hard and got paid a lot more. Now, I'm not necessarily supportive of unionizing. I am in a union, but that's a whole other story. But in any case, I agree with you. We've got to get the economy going and get government out of the way so businesses can take off and start employing people.
Exactly.
And that solves a lot of problems. The only problem that leaves then is government then can comfortably stay at the size it is and doesn't have the the sort of incentive to shrink. And we talked about this cycle where, you know, the economy is doing really well, government can grow, and California is a perfect – you live there – is a perfect example of, oh, let's float a bunch of bonds because we know we'll have the money and the economy's good on down the road, and we'll pay for this and pay for that. And then the economy tanks, and those bonds come due, and they don't have the money to pay it. But they don't want to shrink the size of government either at this point now.
Perfect example, Tom, $299 billion a year from California. The government subsidizes California with $299 billion. Addicted to the federal government in that way. So what we need to do is pull back and limit the size of government, because basically government has tied everything so much up in knots that we don't have any breathing room. Americans have no independence as far as forming small businesses. Americans have no independence as far as trying to make jobs. Everything is wrapped up in federal regulations. So if we pull things back and we limit the size of government, which absolutely has to be done, and one way of doing that is going back to the local level, is let's bring back things to the local level and let's stop giving the government, and again, this is something that happens that people aren't aware of, is only 70% of what we give the federal government comes back to the state. Okay, so, you know, that money could be best used by the state in the first place. And who says the federal government should mandate how that money is spent?
Right.
And then taking a 30% is basically skimming. They're skimming operations.
Oh,
isn't that something that's usually illegal?
Yeah.
I mean,
Paula, you've heard me say all this stuff before. I call it a form of now the words are evading me.
Racketeering?
Money laundering. Money laundering. Because with money laundering, one way to get, and it's a different purpose, but money gets skimmed off along the way. It's going to get skimmed off. And the other example is, I got a lake out behind where I live. And can you imagine picking up a bucket of water and walking to the other side and pouring it back in? But you know, as you walk along, you're going to spill a little and you're going to see some pretty flowers and want to give it to them. It never makes it back. So I absolutely agree. The money should just stay in the states to begin with, instead of the federal government taking it and then doling it out the way they see fit. That was never intended by our founders, and our government structure is not set up to handle that properly. Therefore, it's never going to work properly.
Yeah. Well, one thing that Americans, and this is even true of some people who are Republican or conservative in nature, and not necessarily all conservatives are like this, but some, I've noticed that they look to government first to act. And rather than looking locally, and a good principle of conservatism is to find a local solution. Don't get government involved. And this is how government has grown, because people expect that security net, which ironically Social Security is such a security net, which is being questioned now and may be in some way the amount of money that people have invested, they're not going to receive that back. Well, now is the time that you need that security net, and now is the worst possible time that you can begin attacking it. So, again, you know, looking towards the government to solve problems, let's look at things from a local level and start looking to our local communities. If our local communities can't handle it, then we look to the state. But, you know, we've got to get back to state sovereignty. We've got to get back to minimizing the power that the federal government has. This situation that we're in, this pre-crisis or crisis, if you want to call it that, is absolutely a result of our dependence on the federal government and having it grown out of proportion. And it is essentially controlled everything that we do and touch and want to do these days. So we can't do anything without the federal government, and it's bound and determined to increase its size and influence. We need to stay away from that, because that's towards a socialist state, a welfare state, and that's a lost cause. We will just be working for the people in the future and paying more and more taxes. You know, that's the only solution to this is bring the economy back. I can't emphasize that more. And I wish more politicians would look at that as a practical solution to this. Why no one is thinking about job creation, I'm not sure. But certainly it is, as you mentioned, because they don't want to work as hard. It will require a lot of work, and it will require a lot of bipartisan cooperation, but it has to be done to reevaluate our tax structure. Decrease, as odd as that sounds, decrease corporate taxes. This is not the time to increase corporate taxes. You want to close those loopholes, but you want to reduce the tax burden on corporations. We want jobs first. Revenue from the corporations, you know, maybe 1.3% of the GDP, I think. But you know, we need to generate jobs first, and we need to limit the size of the government. I think that's what you're trying to the point you were trying to make earlier, as far as what we need to emphasize.
Yeah, because if we grow the economy and it's doing okay at the size the government's at right now, then it's going to grow even more. And so we need to do something about that now before it loses the incentive and people lose the incentive to try and shrink that. But in any case, give us your email one more time, Philip. And
it's pcyoung@volcano.net.
Okay.
And I will be putting up a website. It should be finished today or tomorrow, that has more specific information. And like I said, it has some of these articles that are very good. The Pew Charitable Trust, Posner Report, Economic Report, that talks about some of these very intelligently written. Unlike the Simpson Commission that discussed actually increasing a 15-cent gasoline tax. I don't think Americans want to see higher prices at the gas pump and increasing taxes to control government
spending. Those two
spending.
Guys that wrote that commission report, they're part of the problem. They were part of the problem. It's interesting how we get people that created this mess to begin with after the fact, then to try and tell us how to fix it.
Yeah, or give them the keys to the Federal Treasury and say, here, fix it.
All right, Philip. Well, it's a pleasure having you on. We'll have you back. Send me information about the website so we can put that out to folks on upcoming broadcasts, and we'll be in touch.
Okay. Love to be back. Thank you for letting me go on the air. I greatly appreciate it, Tom. Thanks a lot.
All right. Take care, Philip. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Bye. Bye.
Well, Paula, boy, kind of a long day. I think you need to go take a break. Thanks for hanging in there. I'll be broadcasting everybody again tomorrow. Special broadcast with D.E. Dreyer. Don't miss it. Great article and great articles. She's the optimistic conservative, and she also happens to be a retired Navy commander and was an intelligence officer in the Navy. Now, when you say, I got to joke Dick about this next time he comes on, when you say Army intelligence officer, it's sort of like an oxymoron, right? It's like, what? Intelligence, Army? But when you say Navy intelligence officer, then it actually has some meaning. It's like, yeah, that can actually happen. So, poor joke, but anyway, I'll be talking with her tomorrow. And don't want to miss that. So we'll talk about her articles and what upcoming articles she may be contemplating writing. She's working on a book, by the way, and we want to talk about that and find out what book it is. So in any case, all right, thanks for hanging in there, Paula, and I'll see you, let's see, next week, and I didn't mention that. Won't be broadcasting on Monday. We'll be broadcasting on Tuesday and Wednesday. I think I did mention it, but let's reiterate it. Tuesday and Wednesday of next week is the broadcast. We'll see you there, and anybody else that wants to listen in tomorrow, please do, and you can call in as well. All right, anything else, Paula?
Oh, that's it. That's all she wrote.
All right. Take care, Paula. Have a great rest of the week.
You're listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.